And that's a little piece from the B minor Mass by Johann Sebastian Bach, sung by the Cathedral Choir of St. Mary's in Sydney under the direction of Thomas Wilson, our guest in this hour. Thomas, you're a boy from New Zealand, from Hamilton. You ended up in Westminster Cathedral, London, and you've come to Sydney now as the new director of music. Where did all this start?
Well, I suppose it started from wanting to be able to play the piano, wanting to be able to make some sort of sound. I think possibly also from wanting to be involved in the life of the church. I always wanted to play music in the church where I grew up in Hamilton. And when I went to school and discovered this instrument called the organ, that was rather exciting for me. And not only was it a keyboard, which I sort of understood from having learnt the piano, but it also made an amazing sound.
Well, I'm amused over the years because I've watched this, as you know, my private life, a church musician as well, and I've watched boys and girls react to the pipe organ because it's such a vast thing and makes such a loud noise that boys are often very attracted to this.
It's such an involving instrument because it's a very physical thing, not just to play. I mean, you've got arms and feet going, but also to feel. When you listen to it, it's not just the sound. The organ rumbles, and it rumbles the building around you, and it rumbles your very insides as well. So I think it involves children in quite an exciting way.
It's a powerful thing, I suppose. It's not like a violin or a flute in that sense.
Indeed.
Now, you were the director of music at Sacred Heart in Wellington by 18. Now, that's fairly precocious, isn't it?
I suppose so. I think one of the things that has helped me to have had the experiences that I've been fortunate to have is that I grew up in New Zealand. I really wonder if I'd grown up somewhere like the United Kingdom, whether I would have been allowed to do the sorts of things that I've been able to do. Because there aren't so many people that are involved in church music or organs or choirs in a country like New Zealand, there are opportunities.
Not unlike Australia too, because I know people warmly react in church circles when a young boy or girl expresses interest in playing the pipe organ.
I think that's true, and certainly growing up in Hamilton when I was about 12 or 13, there was no choir at the Roman Catholic Cathedral in Hamilton, and I thought there should be. So I was given the job of starting one, initially to sing at Christmas. And obviously I didn't have a clue what I was doing, and you learn by making mistake after mistake. But it's not the worst way in the world to start. And the next step for me going to Wellington, I remember that it was a big risk for the dean of the cathedral to put that sort of trust in an 18-year-old. The choir in the cathedral in Wellington had been very well established. It was a very fine group of musicians. So I was aware that it was a big deal, that they were asking me to take it on. And again, it was learning by doing, and this time having to take advice, learning to be flexible. And when I went to the UK, I think all of those experiences stood me in very good stead because I was going back to the bottom of the pile.
Well, that was the next step, wasn't it? The Royal Academy.
That's right.
Now, what was that experience like?
It was amazing in many ways. I mean, I had enjoyed my time at Victoria University in Wellington, where I did a bachelor's degree in organ playing. But going somewhere like the Royal Academy of Music, where you're surrounded by the best musicians in the world, not just the normal teaching staff, your other students, but also the incredible number of people that would come in either to perform or to take masterclasses. It was mind-blowing in every sense. And also to be suddenly in London, which for many people is perhaps one of several cultural centres, for certainly for church music, that I can think of.
You ended up at Westminster Cathedral, and herein there's a tie between all you do now and where you started out, organ, then singing. What was the position at Westminster, and how did that come about?
Well, my position at Westminster sort of morphed a little bit in the time I was there. First of all, I arrived in the UK and applied for the organ scholarship at Westminster Cathedral.
Which is a bit of money for a young person to support themselves and learn some stuff.
That's right. It's a student role in the cathedral to really learn and be part of the professional establishment there.
And which you run at St. Mary's too now, don't you, here in Sydney?
Absolutely, we do. That's something we've only just started having. The Master of Music at Westminster Cathedral felt that the organ scholarship wasn't perhaps the right role for me, given that I had run a music department in another cathedral, albeit in little old New Zealand. Mm. So I was a little bit sort of disappointed that I wasn't going to be able to be the organ scholar. Not very long afterwards, I got a phone call from the Master of Music saying, actually, we'd like to create a new job for you, something that takes into account the experience that you've had, but we want to involve you in what we're doing here. I couldn't believe my luck. So I started at Westminster Cathedral with a job that really was a blank piece of paper. Initially, they called it assistant organist.
Right.
So another pair of hands to be around, to play the organ, to help with the choir, to help with the music.
Then it morphed into that strange thing called a precentor.
It did.
After, what is that?
After I had finished my degree and had more time on my hands, I was involved with helping write a document that was presented at the Vatican describing the role of music within Westminster Cathedral's liturgy. Westminster Cathedral, like so many English institutions, is very codified. There's a rationale for everything.
It's very organised every time I've been there.
It certainly is. And so helping to write this explanation of how the music fits into the liturgy helped me to discover an interest in the broader role of music within the church. And as part of that, and as part of the discussions and the time we spent in Rome, the administrator of the cathedral decided that he might like to involve me more in the running of the liturgy of the cathedral. They had always had this role of precentor, which is a peculiarly English role, really. It comes from monastic usage.
The singer, as it were.
Indeed, yeah. Yes. And at Westminster Cathedral, a priest had traditionally been in charge of coordinating all the different facets of the liturgy, of which music is one, but also the ceremonial, all the various bits that come together to make the services happen.
And you're a layman, married by that stage or not?
That's right, yes. In fact, I was the first layperson, and I think so far the only layperson, to have had that position, which was an interesting departure for them and for me, but I loved it. It was a little bit like being the producer of a film or an opera, in that you have to understand the totality of what's going on and make sure it works.
And getting down to brass tacks, it is in fact a producer job.
I think that's right, yes.
In TV or radio, this is the person who thinks through the project, puts together the key people, plans it out, makes sure that it's executed. And if you remove the spiritual stuff, it is in fact a producer job, effectively presenter.
Exactly.
Thomas Wilson there playing some Frescobaldi with the lay clerks of Westminster Cathedral accompanying. Well, what makes music sacred music? I mean, do you use modern American stuff like St. Louis Jesuits? There's a whole lot of stuff which is within the sacred realm. What to you distinguishes it as sacred, and not Rossini opera or not something
else? I would say beauty. An idea which the current Pope has expressed, and as indeed have many great thinkers, is that beauty is not the icing on the liturgical cake, if you will. It's the essence. That there is no true liturgy without beauty.
So you're saying aesthetics is part of it?
I think undoubtedly. Now, there are certainly people that might say, well, all things are relative, and what might be beautiful to one person might not be beautiful to another. I think that's rubbish. I think there are very, very clear aesthetics in terms of beauty. Yes, it may well be in the eye of the beholder, but we know that most people would put Mozart within the category of beautiful music. I'm not necessarily saying Mozart.
Any Mozart, though, you see? Any Mozart? Because the Sydney Anglicans will say to you, and often do, worship in the beauty of holiness, not in the holiness of beauty. So how do you distinguish?
I'd say try take the beauty out of your worship and see what's left.
Well, let me take another aspect of what you've been doing there. Gregorian chant has figured largely in what you've been doing. In fact, there's been a real growth in it in the cathedral usage here, and it uses Latin. Now, Benedict, again, in the same letter said, I would be in favour of a new openness towards the use of Latin, and he talks on about his interest in chant as well. Why is that figuring so much in what you do now, Gregorian chant?
It's my job to, as I've said before, to make sure that the cathedral is ringing to an appropriate liturgical music. And there's no mystery here. There's document upon document, and indeed, the church's only official musical book is called the Graduale Romanum, which is
Gregorian chant.
It is a book full of Gregorian chant and nothing else. That is the only official book of music to sing at Mass. So it makes sense that that's where we start. It's not all we do. It is, however, the backbone. But there's another reason for that. It was made very clear to me that I was being appointed to St. Mary's in order to continue the tradition, the very great tradition that my predecessors had established. And that was of singing the great masterworks of Renaissance polyphony by composers such as Palestrina, Victoria, and so on. In my experience from working at Westminster Cathedral, I learnt that the best way to make sure that one's polyphony is good is to be able to sing Gregorian chant. It teaches not just the boys, but the men about the way to shape a phrase, about how to sing confidently. If they can all sing confidently in unison, then they'll be much more able to sing in four or six or eight parts.
So there's actually a practical reason for using Gregorian chant.
Absolutely. The chant is a little bit like going to the gym every day for the boys.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of chant. Let's hear some of what you've been doing. Gregorian chant there, sung by the choir of St. Mary's Cathedral, that old chant, some as late as the 12th century, some much earlier. The traditional music, I suppose, of the Catholic Church that the current Pope has been very encouraging of, I suppose. But that being said, Thomas, I need to ask you, there will be, as you know, within the church, those who don't agree with this and don't like it at all, as a matter of fact. And there are those who are very concerned that, you know, there are factions in the church at the moment, and there's a faction which is called the Reform of the Reform, and they see this as rolling back the Second Vatican Council and rolling back the sort of freedoms that it seemed to be implying and all those things. Now, what do you say to those people who would look at what you do and go, oh, this is retrograde, this stuff?
Well, they may very well feel that. All I can say is that I've been given quite a specific brief, which is to run this choir, which sings a certain type of music in a certain type of way, in a Gothic building, as part of the liturgy of an archdiocese. Now, it's very hard to pretend that the cathedral is anything other than what it is, or that the choir is anything other than what it is. I think any rationalist would agree that we must make the best of what we actually have and what we actually are. I think what is wonderful about the so-called new movements, you mentioned Reform of the Reform, is that it's allowing people to do what the Catholic Church has always done well. That's all I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to reinvent any wheel. I'm not trying to be part of a new movement. I'm just trying to express ourselves in the way I think that that building and that worship community...
Well, I suppose this is what I'm trying to get at, in that there's a continuity in what you're doing. David Russell before you, John DeLuca before him, Ron Hardin, I think, before that. This is the continuity. They've all done this sort of music, and it's not as if you're doing it anew, is it?
Absolutely not. We are just continuing the tradition as it's been handed down to us. Had my brief been different, well, possibly I wouldn't be here. Had the role been different, then I'm sure that there'd be a different approach taken.
Let's take another little piece of music just to demonstrate the sort of variety that the cathedral choir does. On ABC Radio with me, Noel DeBean, and my guest is Thomas Wilson, the Director of Music at St Mary's Cathedral in Sydney, now there roughly 1 year and making his mark in the music there. Thomas, the choir's off to Rome shortly. This must be a bit of a big deal.
It's a very big deal for us. It's the first time that the cathedral choir will have gone overseas together in over 20 years now.
Oh, they did those tours with David Russell, didn't they?
They did some two or three, absolutely amazing overseas trips some time ago. And
I was on one of them, actually. That's going back 25 years ago, but go on.
And I've heard from several people that had been on these trips that they've never forgotten them, that they were the trip of a lifetime in every sense. So this opportunity came relatively recently to be part of the opening ceremonies for Domus Australia.
Now you better explain what that is, because that's quite a significant development, isn't it?
It's a fascinating development. It's the latest of, I suppose, a venerable tradition of pilgrim houses in Rome, places that were to be open specifically to a particular national group of pilgrims to make them feel at home in the Eternal City. And now Australians have their very own home in Rome.
As I recall it, I think the Cardinal was the motivating force behind this. He managed to convince quite a number of his fellow bishops to throw in money, and they've purchased and renovated a very large building in Rome, and it's actually set out almost like a pilgrim hotel.
I believe so, and I think the goal is to turn tourists into pilgrims, which sounds to me a fascinating idea. The building, which has been entirely redesigned for the new purpose, sounds incredible, and I can't wait to see what it will be like.
I've had a look at the websites, and it's extensive what's been done there. It has its own chapel. Now, you'll be involved in the opening of this, the official opening. Is that the story?
That's correct. Cardinal Pell, as part of the opening ceremonies, will need to consecrate the new altar in that chapel. And the cathedral choir will have the privilege of singing at that ceremony, as well as at some other ceremonies as part of the opening.
Or could the Pope be turning up?
Who knows? It's certainly it's where he lives, so...
unable to confirm or deny. Very good. What will you be doing on this when you're there? What's the plan?
Well, first and foremost, the cathedral choir will be there as pilgrims as well. It'll be certainly the first time for most of the boys ever having been in Rome. And it'll be a pilgrimage on a number of different levels. Firstly, a spiritual one. The boys are all Roman Catholics. And so to actually be in Rome, to be able to see the churches, the buildings, and to be connected with the global church in that way will be very important for them. But secondly, on a musical level, the boys sing a lot of music by Palestrina, and to actually sing in some of the churches where he worked as choirmaster, such as the Cathedral of St. John the Lateran, for them to be able to visit the Sistine Chapel will have huge significance to them as musicians.
A musical pilgrimage as well, as it were.
Absolutely, yes.
Well, Thomas Wilson, our time, sadly, has come to an end. Let's finish with a piece of music to remind us again of the variety of stuff you do.